Welcome to the Draw Doctors Podcast, your weekly dose of fantasy footy content.
Welcome to the Draft Doctors, your home of fantasy footy draft all year round. This week, we're looking at potential breakouts, and later on, we'll take an early look at how we think the first round of your drafts could shake out in both AFL Fantasy and Supercoach. I'm Doss, and joining me on the show this week is Stevie Fizz. G'day, Fizz.
How we doing, boys? G'day to the listeners out there. And, you know, it's an interesting week this week. It's, you know, when you break up with someone and that first initial point, you live in the dream. Things are going swimmingly. Before, you know, in a month or two, your soul is crushed and you're living off microwave pizzas. But right now, we've got rid of the old man stink. No Stato.
Yes, no Stato on the show. Going forward from now, if you listened to last week. But Jono is on the show still. And how are you, Jono?
Much better, thank you, antibiotics. I've got my sense of taste back. We are recording this on Sunday. I got it back on Saturday. So I dropped 5 kilos, thank you to the flu. And I put it all back on straight away on Saturday after regaining my sense of taste. So fantastic.
Yeah, I thought you might have used that 5 keg lost to your advantage for the rig off, Jono. But
hey, I'm not going rig off. I'm going dad bod off. I've got the perfect dad bod. Just that's all what I'm about.
Alrighty, well, we have the star of the show this week, Cam McLaughlin, because we'll be using your data for these breakout candidates. Firstly, welcome to the show, and can you give us a rundown on exactly what the starter is and what we mean when we talk about breakouts in this instance?
Yeah, I feel like a bit of the rebound, actually, going on that Stato thing, and yeah, it might be a trade-up.
Yeah, no, at this point, I've realised I've horribly fucked up and we need him back. It's this is bad.
So we get to have a chat about data today, which is great. Basically, over the last couple of weeks, I've pulled all of the data from that's available from AFL from 2012 onwards to have a look at maybe some of the less traditional indicators to see if there are ways to identify breakouts. Traditionally, we use things like fantasy score, disposals, tackles, and the correlation between those over the first couple of years of someone's career to say, yeah, this person's tracking well to break out. But I kind of want to know if there were those sort of other indicators that would show a likely breakout in their second, third, and fourth year players. What I did was I did find a couple of things that correlated. And so I've built a model that essentially scores people based on those attributes. And if you want to have a look at some of the attributes, you can do far less. The attributes?
Attributes?
No, the attributes.
No.
No.
It's data and attributes.
And data.
You've gone too far. Too far.
So if you if you want to actually have a look. If you actually want to go have a look at some of the attributes, they're available on Stats Pro. You can just go on there, and that's basically the data set which I've used for this analysis. But yeah, essentially I pulled them together, created a scoring model, and what we'll talk about today are the sort of top three on that scoring model for the second year, third year, and fourth year players. Essentially, I want to call out that there will be a few that are just missing. They've just missed the threshold from a data perspective, but some of these players may actually have a better opportunity than those who are tracking better in the data. That contextual information that isn't available in historic data is stuff that we are going to bring to the table through our discussions. So we may as well start with our second year, and I think, Steve, you've got the first one off the rank there.
Yeah, so we got Bailey Smith, and I found it really hard because looking at all the numbers, everything's there, and he had a really low time on ground to go with it. So he's hitting the points per minute. You know, he's winning the contested ball, he's getting the ground ball gets, good kicking efficiency, score involvements, all the things you love to see, along with a really nice Dream Team average there. But my problem is, how does he go up aside from the time on ground thing? Like, how does he really get better? And you look at the scorers from the Western Bulldogs, so you've got McRae, who's one of the top scorers in the game, Bontempelli and Dunkley, all over 100, and Dunkley obviously well over 100 as well, especially in the back half. You've also got Lucky Hunter, 98, Caleb Daniel, 93, so there's a lot of really good scorers there. And then you sort of look at the guys who he's competing against for maybe a spot. Well, I don't want to say he's competing for a spot in the team because it feels like he's locked into the 22. But you've still got like Libber, Wallace, Lipinski, Riley West, Toby McLean, Matty Suckling. I know Matty Suckling is turning 32, but Sam Lloyd, I thought he had a really good year. Like, you know, they've got so much young talent who all kind of do the same thing at the Western Bulldogs. It feels hard for me to go, yes, he's going to become a relevant player. And I think when we talk about breakouts, there's a couple of steps, isn't there, Cam? There's the breakout to become relevant, and there's the breakout to become an elite.
Yes, correct.
So, and also I'm looking at, you know, the Western Bulldogs were a pretty strong scoring AFL fantasy team. I'd expect Tim English to get better next year as well. To me, it's sort of, like, everything looks good if you just look at the player, but then we're looking at the peripherals of the situation and you go, well, does it stack up?
Yeah, correct. And that's what I couldn't find a story where his time on ground increases, because you're right, across the board, he ticks all of the boxes and aligns with some of the, you know, really good players breaking out in their second year. He's on track with Clayton Oliver, and Oliver went massive, right? So, but he just won't have the opportunity, I don't think.
Yeah, and you know, when I've looked at these sort of things in the past, I think it's a talent meets opportunity situation. And in a lot of the cases, it's always opportunity that helps the talent, if you like. And in this case, because like and when it happened to Oliver, I thought it was really surprising because they moved out Nathan Jones to get him that opportunity. I don't see how you can move out any of these guys to get him that opportunity. And what seems even stranger is that the Bulldogs didn't move on from a couple of these guys. Or maybe they tried and they couldn't.
Yeah. And I think the exciting thing maybe for Bailey Smith this year is you might be looking at that first step change. There's a chance he comes in as mid-forward. He played pretty high amount of time forward last year, and so there's every chance he becomes, you know, relevant from a, you know, 75 to 80 average forward perspective, and then maybe there's a future step in there as well.
Yeah, and that's probably what he's going to need, because I don't think he's going to be draftable. Like, in a redraft league, he's probably not going to be draftable as a pure mid this year. And but I think it's a real question for keeper owners going forward. Like, where does he get to? Because I mean, like, McRae, Bont, Dunkley, Hunter, these guys aren't old.
Yeah. Yeah, you're looking at a list that's basically 26 and under. Okay, John, I think you've got the next one.
Yeah, so I've got Connor Rosie from Port Adelaide, and Steve just mentioned about opportunity, and this is a guy who actually has a lot of opportunity going forward, because Port Adelaide have an ageing midfield with Boak, Rocky and Gray, all in their 30s now, and Connor Rosie's actually come out this preseason and said, I want to play midfield. So he's going to be building his tank, trying to get into that midfield for longer stints, where he did play a little bit midfield in 2019 there, took a few CBAs. So it might be something that Ken Hinckley is going to look towards to build the future. His scoring was fantastic for a first-year player, knocking out 4 Supercoach tons and 2 AFL fantasy tons for a 77 Supercoach average and 72. So that's pretty good for a first year player who's listed as defender forward. I think he retains a forward status this year just through the number of goals he kicked, but just his score build. He can kick, mark, tackle, handball, kick goals as well. So that score build's there. And if he's inside mid or playing a bit of an inside outside mid, then he can really, not, you know, hit the stratosphere of 100 average, but push up to an 85 to maybe 90 average in 2020.
I really love Rosie. As we all know, I called him the weapon last year. And I just wonder, with this model, Cam, as well, and just in general, have we seen, and it's off the top of your head, so it's probably hard to answer, but have we seen a breakout where the time on ground has already been higher in that first year, or, you know, the second year to third year? Because I think the second to third year, more likely, we might have seen a higher time on ground with the bump, and it's obviously based on the role, but I can't recall one of the first to second year breakouts off the top of my head that started with Rosie had 82% time on ground for his 72 and 77. I'm just wondering, obviously, I think his potential is huge, and if he did go into the midfield next year, we could see a big score build, but the time on ground upside's not there, and I'm just wondering, you know, has that happened before, or can you recall of something like that?
Similarly? Yeah, so generally, what I've tried to do with the model as well is infer opportunity, because it's really hard to infer opportunity around the ball without sort of a CBA data set. And so I've pulled a few different things together to infer it. And time and ground is one of those things. From first year to second year, there's generally that sort of jump, as you're suggesting, in regards to time and ground going up and therefore a rise in fantasy score as well. For Connor Rosie, it sort of aligns a little bit closer from memory to something like a Jack McRae, where he did see a decent time on ground in that first season, but then propelled his score through a higher amount of clearances in that second season. So if you look at Connor Rosie this year, he averaged something like 0.7 clearances a game, right? So there's a big differential between that and, say, your elite clearance numbers like Cripps, or your elite clearance numbers like McRae, or your elite... So I think there's a significant gap there. And if you look at the opportunity, he just hasn't had that opportunity to get those clearance numbers. So I think it's possible, but role and opportunity are so important for him to get that.
But also that time on ground would attribute to the fact that he probably played sat in that forward 50 a lot, so spending more time on ground than less on the bench. So that if he's playing more midfield time, that'll come down to probably 70%, 75%. Once he does build that tank, like a lot of midfielders do in the new game.
Cool. And my biggest question around Rosie in general is, can he actually get... Is this year the right year for him to get that opportunity in there? I think it'll be stints, but I don't think it'll be... I don't think it'll be significant, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but if he's got a forward status, then you're taking him at the back end of your draft, and who's someone who could pop at an 85... as a D5 yeah. bench cover, that's fantastic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Doss, I think you've got the next one, mate.
Yes. Jack Ross of Richmond, pick 43 in the 2018 draft and heading into his second year as well, played 7 games in his rookie season, averaging 62 AFL fantasy and the same Supercoach points. People got pretty excited, especially in the salary cap formats, with Jack Ross just providing a bit of cash for you when he got high scores of 92 and 86 AFL fantasy points, that is, in round 6 and 4. His averages also included a really bad injury in round 8, where he only played about 20% time on ground due to that syndesmosis injury. And Cam, you're pretty familiar with such an injury, and you have assured us it's not too enjoyable. But he's certainly one where the time on ground upside is there, only the 66% time on ground, and he had that nice score build that Steve was alluding to with Bailey Smith as well. 7 contested, 11 uncontested possessions. You know, if you sort of extrapolate that out after the 66% and bring it up to about a 75 or so, it's looking pretty nice together with his natural progression. So he's got a nice score build. And when he did play, at times he had a really nice inside midfield role. So Hardwick hasn't shied away from playing young guys in big roles, which we've seen over the last few years. So heading into next year, that would be my question with Jack Ross. I certainly would see why the data would be pointing to Ross being one of those candidates. I'd be pretty concerned with potentially his role, and also the fact he's got that pure mid status. I think heading into next year, that would be the same. And I don't think he'd be really draftable, especially with guys like Marlon Pickett, who shone in the grand final, and, you know, he probably will be playing a bit more midfield next year. I assume they'll still be trying to get Bolton through there, although if Jack Ross is healthy, whether Bolton goes through there would be a question. But yeah, that's my thoughts on Jack Ross. I don't know if anyone else has any thoughts. Like, I think he's a really good player in the future. I'd be a little skeptical personally on a big jump next year.
Yeah, no, I completely agree.
I don't know if you just saw it before we started recording, but Jack Higgins says he's trying to go for round one as well. And we saw before he got injured that they were playing him through the midfield as well, trying to turn him into a midfielder. So there's another bit of competition that Jack Ross has got if Hardwick does prefer Higgins over Ross or Pickett or whoever. So there's going to be a bit of competition there, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And just as we close off the second year potential breakouts, is the couple that missed out, Chase Jones, Jordan Clark, and James Rowbottom. Any thoughts on those three boys?
I like James Rowbottom. I think in terms of his opportunity, that's the one that I think, like, you know, could be there, as well as Chase Jones, whether or not they decide to run him, say, a bit through the midfield. I think he'll get more opportunity. I'm not sure if any of them, you know, Rowbottom he had the forward status. So he's, again, he could be in that rosy category of, like, you know, your last pick and see if he pops for an, whatever, like an 80 or something, Steve.
Yeah, I think Rowbottom is interesting mostly just for opportunity's sake. I think, you know, Sydney being a rebuilding club, I'm probably not hot on Jones. But sorry, what was the third one? Because
you have Rowbottom, you have
Jordan Clark.
Yeah, Jordan Clark. Yeah, Jordan Clark to me seems really interesting because I look at Geelong, the whole team, the average age is like DOS. Like, they need to start bringing some younger guys through, especially when they just lost a guy like Tim Kelly, so.
Are you talking about perceived DOS age or actual DOS age?
Perceived DOS age.
Oh.
Well, I mean, they're both high.
And just to bring it back to the high time on ground and upside DOS, so Stephen Coniglio is one to have a look at as a benchmark there for high time on ground in first year.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's a good one. Cheers. Also, Cam, just quickly, because I mentioned this guy a month or so ago and copped a little bit for it, saying Xavier Dersma heading into his second year, potentially one of those guys that, not second year blues, because I think he's still got a lot of improvement in him, but just the fact that it's so much harder to improve on a really solid first year compared to an average first year without those opportunities and time on ground. Is that where the data was pointing to you with Dersma? Because, like, some people are really high on Dersma, obviously.
Yeah, correct. And look, Dersma's going to be amazing. I just don't think... So there's probably something that I've not mentioned yet, in that people... We've classified some people as already having broken out. So Dersma, in his role, has probably hit that step change already, where you'd expect him to, you know, he'd probably be as good as his first season, maybe a little bit of an improvement, but he's not going to leap ahead. And the data didn't suggest he would either. Similarly with Sam Walsh. Sam Walsh clearly already burst into relevancy in the first year. And the numbers do suggest that he could actually break the model completely and go ballistic this year. But, you know, we considered him broken out, and hence why we haven't talked about him as well.
Okay, cool.
So I'll move on to the third year, and I'll start with, you know, those who just missed out. Doss's boy, Paddy Dow, and Charlie Constable.
See, Rob, I am really questioning this model, Cam. Because rancid Paddy Dow. What are the average? Nah. Like 37? Same age as you, Doss?
So it's actually really interesting because I was so surprised by this. I wrote to Doss on Facebook saying, oh my God, Paddy Dow, because there's a strong correlation between early and frequent opportunity in a relevant role and persistent breakout in third and fourth years. And so he has been at centre stoppages for the last 2 years.
They've had no fucking team.
Yeah, I know, but that's the opportunity side, right?
No, but,
and you're suggesting, is there talent? Is the other side of the equation. Already broken out in this category, by the way, James Warpole. He's actually tracking to go bigger, similar to Oliver Bont, Cripps, McRae, as far as tracking goes. Steve, you've got the first one in third year.
There's no surprise. A lot of man love for this person. I am hashtag Gayshaw for Brayshaw. Average the 69, nice dream team points. And look, It seems to be a lay-down misere that this player has to improve. 71% time on ground. That's the kicker, man. This guy was barely out there. 2% less, and oh, my God. Frio, despite having the player who averaged the third most centre clearances in the game, they rank quite poor as a team for centre clearances. So they really need to get stronger in there. When you consider they're running guys through like Methuselah, David Mundy, Reece Conker, Darcy Tucker. I mean, Michael Walters is a gun, so I, you know, can deal with that. But they've got a new coach coming in who, and Ross Lyon and Michael Walters were, you know, from all reports in the outside world, like pretty tight. So Brayshaw, really high points per minute, like almost a minute point per game, which is pretty good. He's shown massive inside traits with a lot of tackles, contested possessions. The area he does need to get better in is the uncontested ball. Ed Langdon, Brad Hill, out of this team. That's uncontested ball city. Whether Fremantle are actually good enough to do something with that will be interesting. I'm sure Justin Longmuir will bring a strong skills emphasis coming from Collingwood, who were a very, you know, one of the highest possession teams in the league. So I'd expect that to come across, and hopefully that's a good thing. Third season, obviously, you know, that can be give or take, whether that's the breakout thing or not. But I really can't see a way that Brayshaw doesn't become fantasy relevant this year, moving into the 85-plus, hopefully 90 range.
With Brayshaw, it's actually pretty funny as well. The time on ground factor for these players has tended to be guys like you saw Clayton Oliver was one that broke out, and he went from being, it must be said, a bit of a pud in the first year to shredding down and getting a better runner. It's weird with Brayshaw because Brayshaw coming in to his draft year, one of his better attributes was running and aerobic capacity. So it was strange that he just... What he sort of said is that he just needed the size in there to really take the hits continuously because aerobic capacity is not an issue for Brayshaw. He'll be able to bump his time on ground up massively if Longmuir trusts him with that role.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was one of the things that, you know, was very noticeable in regards to his numbers for, you know, even when you look at things like clearances and you're right, the contested possession, uncontested possession split is probably a little bit off, but they were clearly protecting his body in the first couple of years while he developed. I think he'll probably get more of a run this year in that mid. Jono, on to you for Mr. Chera.
Yeah, so Adam Chera, and definitely one for the opportunity side of the card here. We know Ross the Boss didn't like the young kids, just played them out of position or didn't play them at all. So only averaged 60 AFL fantasy and 62 super coach. We know Adam Chera's got the talent to burn. We want him in as an inside midfielder. As Steve said, you've got Methuselah, Mundy there, the likes of Walters maybe on the outs as well. So Justin Longmuir could come into this team and just redevelop how that whole midfield sets up. So you've got to have five. You might have Chera, Brayshaw, Conker, who the hell knows, running through there. New style game plan that might be a bit more free-flowing than Ross the Boss. So he is certainly a watch over the preseason for me. And while he might not go from 60 to 100 straight away, he's going to be a bit of a slow burn prospect. He's probably, I know they're this, in the similar sort of vein, but this might sound weird, but he's a year behind Brayshaw in terms of fantasy, where we've seen Brayshaw in the 70s and 80s this year. Chera might do that in 2020 and then progress on from that. So I'm keen for Chera, but he's certainly a slow burn prospect for me.
Yeah, I think it was pretty interesting when Chera, looking at the model, he was one of the ones that made me correct the model over and over and over again because he regressed, you know, in a few different areas this year in regards to his break, his first season. But he was still showing positively in the model. So like, he still improved year on year as far as the model went. And so it's actually, I think, a testament to the fact that he's maybe developing a more rounded game, having played through different positions over the first 2 years. And I think it could be a really big positive going into his third year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Doesn't it seem if you compared the two Fremantle players we've just spoken about, if any of them were going to jump into the 110 range, it'd be Chera. But the guy who's probably going to have the better floor is Brayshaw.
Yes. Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Yeah. Doss, you've got Mr. Clark.
Hunter Clark. Yes, we proclaimed it was going to be Hunter Clark season in 2020. A fair while ago now, sort of at the end of last year, he was starting to play really well in the back half and just started killing it. So we all proclaimed it. But then the Saints brought in a bunch of players in the trade period. And I feel like people are cooling on a Clark 2020 breakout, but I'm glad the model suggests it's there. And I, for one, am not cooling on this. I think it's still coming. Two AFL fantasy tons in his second year, really burst onto the scene after the Saints bye and continued to improve following Brett Ratton's appointment. Something that's actually been a bit of a myth around Clark, though, is his mid time. I feel like people think he played a lot of mid last year, and it's really not the case. We did the centre bounce attendances, really was up there in those as well. And his best two fantasy scores last year in AFL Fantasy, 119 in round 17 and 105 in round 18. Do you guys want to guess how many centre bounces he attended in those two games where he had his best games?
I'm going to say a donut.
Zero. Correct. If you don't believe me, check our centre bounce attendance articles on the Draft Doctor's website for those rounds. He played as a defender in those games and did occasionally have a couple of CBAs here or there during the later parts of the year. So Clark's role in 2020 is probably going to be that defender with a bit of a mix of midfield, maybe even help out on a wing and push Billings forward at times as well. But I think his natural progression along with his just ball magnet ability wherever he plays, together with that splash of an almighty gut feel, I think Clark's season still in full swing for mine. What do you guys think? What, Steve, what's your opinion on Clark? I know you were big on him at the end of the year, but trade period, has it swayed you?
Yeah, look, it hasn't done anything for him, I don't think. I want to be excited. I want to be excited, Doss. But there's the other side of my brain saying, look, Robin seems like he might have turned the corner with his health. Jimmy Webster will probably come back. You know what I mean? There's just more questions than answers. I don't know, man. I don't know. I'll draft him. But love the guy. Love him.
Yeah. It honestly probably makes me keener to draft him now that there is all these question marks, because you probably, if he does break out, which I am, again, I think he's just too good not to, basically. Yeah. Like, he just is one of those guys. And the fact that there's these question marks, you might even get him a great, like, better value now. I think he's going to fall. So,
well, I don't know if he'll fall, because I think, you know, like, we sit here and talk about it. Well, we're talking about it every week, every year. Like, it, you know, your casual drafter isn't going to go, oh, fuck, Hunter Clark, you know. If the guy's coming back, he might slow down, sort of thing. They might not even know he exists, mate. They might go, Hunter Clark?
Yeah, fair.
Who's she? Like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty interesting one as well. Like, he's, you know, I think it's 100% a watch for preseason for role, but from a keeper perspective, it maybe gives you a couple of years extra of him as a defender. You know, so there are, I think it's pretty good benefit there. And if he does that sort of intermittent step change to, you know, an 85-90 defender, which he showed he absolutely can this year, that's still a pretty good outcome for your Hunter Clark owners. Okay, so we might move on to our fourth year potential breakouts. And this group, far out, this group sucks. Like, there was so many people were just off the mark. And, you know, as you hit your fourth year, you become less and less likely to break out. You sort of start to see a pretty consistent average over the next few years. And so a lot of the stats basically don't change. The people that have just missed out are Andy McGrath, Jack Bowes, Jai Simpkin, Shai Bolton, and Harry Perryman. Perryman was the closest of that lot, but he was basically excluded due to the severe, you know, lack of opportunity that will be available for him at GWS. We've already classified McLuggage as broken out. He's tracking very similar to Matt Crouch, Stephen Coniglio, and actually ahead of Lachie Neal at the same time. So good times potentially for McLuggage, and he probably has the opportunity to burn there as well for a very good year this year. Steve, why don't you kick us off? as he takes a sip of his Coke. Brilliant.
This isn't Coke. This is red the wine. This is the Harvest Lane Classic Australian Dry Red. $9.99 for 4 liters. Thank you. it's not the best I've had, but it's getting the job done. And we're talking about Ollie Florent. And look, I've got a fair bit of interest in Ollie Florent. I picked him up at the right time in our keepers off waivers, and he got a good dose of midfield time, as we saw at the end when Doss and I were tracking the centre bounces. Oh, sorry, Andrew, he did do that. Got in there for the CBAs, and he actually did pretty well. He averaged more centre clearances across the year than maybe some other players you'd consider who would be ahead of him, like Isaac Heaney and Tom Papley, who certainly got their fair share of a go in the middle. The thing with Florent is he's been stuck on a wing. So, look, his contested ball is down, his tackles are down. That's the nature of the role. He did show he can win a contested ball, especially in the back end of the year with a couple of dozen contested possession games. There are some things going his way. The fifth highest averaging player for the Swans has left. That's Zach Jones. The downside is the fifth highest average at the Swans was only 82. So that's pretty rancid. They're really such an even across the team, even across the board team, especially their defenders really just kind of get those scores that are in between relevance and irrelevance. But the interesting thing is I kind of think that Florent can do similar things to Zach Jones. He can certainly spend time in the middle, and he can certainly spend time on the outside or across half-back using the ball. They did, you know, Jared McVeigh and Kieran Jack are both out as well. They both did play a bit last year. I'm kind of interested about Sydney because we kind of look at them and we've always said, yeah, we can't wait till Isaac Heaney gets that midfield time. We can't wait till Callum Mills gets that midfield time. But I kind of wonder if, like, I look at Ollie Florent and he's had more games of 20 plus uncontested ball than Isaac Heaney in 50 less games. Like, maybe this guy is a better midfielder than Isaac Heaney is. So I'm a little bit, I don't expect him to be super relevant outside of, you know, being your M6, M7 in your keeper team. Like, he's probably not redraft relevant unless he does go to that sort of midfield half-back role and he gets defender status throughout the year, and then maybe you're looking at him in redraft. He's already playing like 83% time on ground. Interesting thing about Sydney and talking about those centre clearances, Sydney are actually a poor centre clearance team. So, you know, we think of them as being really good with Josh Kennedy and Luke Parker and that. They're actually poor. So there is probably opportunity. I don't see them going away from guys like JPK and that. But JPK is at the end of his career. I find it more likely they probably look at a Blakely. But I'm just saying there's potential there.
Yeah, I think one thing for me was looking at, and the one concern I have is, as I was saying before, the early and consistent opportunity in a relative role seemed to be like a really important trend across breakouts. And for him, he hasn't really had that opportunity in the role. Doesn't mean it can't happen, but it's less likely.
Yeah, I kind of look at Jack McRae, to be honest. Like, and he was, you know, obviously a better scorer from the second year. But he was playing wing early days and has since moved to a more inside role. Obviously showed the scoring earlier, but maybe that's a game plan thing. I don't know. So I think there's signs there. But for me, it's too hard to jump into relevance as a pure mid from this sort of number, from 69.
Yeah. Is he coming in as pure mid next year?
Oh, I would imagine. I can't see any way he doesn't.
Yeah. No, I agree. Jono, do you want to take us through your fourth year?
Yeah, so I've got Jared Berry, and I'm actually pretty keen and interested in this bloke because as an owner of him this year, he was actually going pretty well until his knee injury. Like, you look at his final average for the year of 80 AFL Fantasy and 85 Supercoach, but before that, he was actually tracking at 91 Supercoach and 84 AFL Fantasy, so he was scoring pretty well and then had that knee knee injury, which kept him out for about 4 or 5 weeks. And then when he came back, his scores just pretty much bottomed out. I think he had one ton at the end of the year in your grand finals. But the question with Jared Berry is going to be, how much time is he going to spend in that midfield? Now, he was playing a bit of midfield time before he got injured, but not so much after he came back. So he's playing a bit more forward, a bit on the wing. And we know with blokes like Zorko, Lyons, and himself, there's three of them who can all play that. So he's going to be the one who's, I think, going to have to bide his time before he gets into that midfield fully. Like Zorko's 31 next year. Jared Lyons still only 27, 28. So I think he's going to have to wait for Zorko to retire. And then we're just going to see him as that forward, mid, which is going to cap his ceiling in terms of averages. So I like him. If he can get a forward role, I'm all on board about it. But I think we're just going to have to bide our time with Jared Berry. He did put in some good scores, but we're just going to have to wait to see him actually break out to a 100-plus midfielder.
His two halves of the season are so stark, and it matches to Jared Lyons, actually, as well. So, like, his clearance numbers went way down into the toilet, and Jared Lyons went through the roof, right? So there was a clear positional switch between the two. I think the one concern, I think he can go a lot better this year, and they'll continue to blood and play the younger guys. It's worked for them to build the squad to now. I'm worried, though, about them bringing in the big-bodied midfielder in Cam Ellis-Yolman. I think they identified that as a necessary piece to go a step further this year, that they didn't have enough size in that mid. And so does that take some opportunity away from Berry, potentially?
Well, Berry can hold his own. Like, he's a pretty good cuddler, so I don't know why they would take him out. Like, I'm thinking that might be they use maybe Lyons more as a forward, or even Zorko, who's just getting a bit long in the tooth, change him out and develop these younger guys coming through with Yolman and Berry and all that coming through. So that's one your possibility and my possibility. So who the hell knows? But I'm still pretty keen on Jared Berry as one of the M7s.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I think you make a good point, Cam. You don't bring in players like that unless you've got some idea as to how to use them. I'm probably not. I find it hard to be in on Berry. Like, I like him, and we all go, oh, well, he's young, he should have upside. I'm not sure about that. Like, I look at Brisbane, and they've got good small forwards. So I would have thought if he's going to progress going forward, it's going to be, you know, you want someone to retire or go onto the wing. Like, Mitch Robinson's getting long in the tooth as well. I think Zorko will spend more time forward. I'm probably not high on him. He probably wouldn't be in my top 50 mids.
I'm interested to see where Zorko plays next year. He's one that I've kept looking at and seeing his average, and I think thinking he's in for a bit of a move next year. But at the same time, he was so good this year that it's hard to see it happening. But so many guys that are similar sort of big bulls they've got at the moment in there. It's a bit of a weird mix, and I want more Clugger mid time too. So it kind of hurts that.
That's the other thing. If you think McCluggage is going to jump to 100 plus average, How does Berry do it as well? Like, as well as a guy like Neil maintain? Especially, like, you know, and good for Brisbane. They've been fantastic this year, and I hope they continue to do well. But maybe things are a bit harder. You know, maybe teams are a bit harder on them this year. I don't know. Maybe they don't finish as high.
Cam Ellis-Yolman is once again that guy, Steve, you're just going to hate in your draft leagues just because he's going to hurt everyone else around him.
I mean, how many times in your redraft leagues, how many times did Berry hit the waiver wire last year? Like, he's the perfect guy to pick up and plug in. Same as Ellis-Yolman.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Doss, why don't you take us through your fourth year fella?
Yeah, so talking about Jack Graham, the unlucky Tiger to miss out on the grand final after injuring himself in that prelim. I don't want to hurt all the Jack Graham truthers' feelings out there. Probably not super high on Graham and think he might be actually a bit overrated in fantasy circles. And I think perhaps this is one where the data might be maybe a little off. Like to hear you guys' opinions after. But he did put up some big numbers at times this year as well, namely that 146 AFL fantasy points and 161 Supercoach points in round 21 against Carlton. So we saw a huge ceiling right there. But Graham's game is based on pressure, and he really doesn't get a heap of the pill. His major attributes, tackling, and Richmond are more about forcing the turnover, but aren't actually a huge tackling team. They rank 12th this year in that category, and you often see their midfielders not really, you know, Shy Bolton can tackle, but it's not one of his major attributes. Dusty, you know, hasn't hit up huge tackle numbers, and Graham is certainly, that's more of his wheelbag, Jono, there. But the Tigers also ranked second last in contested possessions, which indicates that desire to keep it out of those contested situations where tackles are more valuable. So for me, Graham's high scores seem more like those rare monster games than something that will be better going forward. And his best score of the year, the one I just mentioned earlier, he spent most of the time forward in that game and did kick four goals. He actually only attended 2 of 20 centre bounces in that game. And I flagged it on our article because I just didn't see those big scores. People were picking him up off the wire and played him the next week, and I think he dropped a 30 on you. Like, he's just, for me, he's more of a role player for Richmond than a fantasy gun. But he is 21 and, you know, has a bit of upside there and has hit some huge scores. So I'm interested in what you guys think, but I'm not big on Jack Graham in this group for me.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. Basically, I was very surprised, and I think it's more some of those stat lines are quite inflated from a few very, very good games, as you were saying. But the opportunity and mixed with Richmond's game plan, it's not conducive to a lot of high fantasy scores. And similarly, when you look at those possession numbers, they are low. Like, they are very low for a midfielder. Not just at the Tigers, across the board.
Yeah, he's
saving.
He seems like just a guy to me, just a typical Jag. You might put him in matchups like a Jason Castagna sort of player. Like, I mean, good for him. The guy's, you know, I hope he has a great career. I really like watching him play. I think he does some great things. But yeah, I'd have a hard time rolling him out every week.
Yeah.
Saving grace could be a bit of a forward status, and then he might have a little bit of relevancy, but yeah, I don't know, not super high.
Completely agree, and that kind of wraps up our breakouts. I did forget to mention that Tim Taranto obviously had already been considered broken out in that group, and that's all I have from the data side, guys.
I reckon Josh Battle would have been a nice one from that draft had the Saints not gone and got everyone that's going to play that position. I think he's one as well. Like, that draft, there was a couple of names in there that were pretty solid already. Like, Tom Stewart was in that draft as well. So it was a bit rough on that draft there, Cam. But anyway, we'll move on to the second part of the show here, and we're going to be talking about our rankings at very early top, well, positionless ranks, and it's going to be a first round. But first, we'll just give you a reminder, we're back up and running on that website. We've got a couple of new articles on the draftdoctors.com.au. Stevie, you put an article out there, no ruck and idea about what the thoughts are on the ruck situation for next year. We also have an article for the top 7 fantasy scorers from the under 18 champs for your keeper leagues as well, to just look at the upcoming draft crop. The guys from the Keeper League pod did that article up there. So if you check out the website, thedraftdoctors.com.au, we got a fair bit planned coming up as well. So keep an eye out there. And we'll also just mention our ratings that we were doing on our iTunes. We're still trying to get Statesman. We're getting 250, and we'll get Statesman on a skateboard. He's not on the show anymore, but he's not getting away from that kick flip that he's going to be doing. And we have a review from John Harmy. So thank you, John. He says, great content. I found the podcast during last preseason and now tune in regularly. Always something interesting to take away, whether it's purely for draft, but also for classic salary game. Keep up the good work, fellas, and best of luck with the challenge, Statesman. Now, that ratings were at about 234 of 250, and I expect that to climb up a few because, boys, I was in the Apple store today, and just, you know, jumped on a couple of the podcast apps and on each different phone and whacked on the 5 stars. So just trying to help Statesman along there a bit. Yeah, what's going on, Jono?
Now, he may not be on the show, but Steve, you'll agree with me. Tony Hawk, Pro Skater 2, greatest game ever made, right?
Now, no. No. Just the first one. Just the first one.
No, I like two over number one. But anyway, I saw a video before we started recording today. Some guy finished the whole game in 12 minutes. Now, if Stato wants to learn how to do a kick flip, a heel flip, or any sort of trick, he should watch this video and start practicing, because he is going to do it, and we are going to make him do it. Even if we all have to fly down to Tassie and hold a gun to his head, he will do it.
We're going to get Stato doing a 720 cry stare into a dark slide.
That sounds good to me. Perfect,
through the thing in the warehouse.
Yeah.
Over the helicopter blades.
All right. Well, Gary Ablett did it, so Statesman, you've got to do it.
Gary Ablett everyone, did a double kick doing... flip. Double.
Yeah, it was a double. Was
I've seen Gary Ablett. I've seen double it.
Mitch Robinson as well.
Yeah, he had a just line. Like,
yeah.
I've seen Gary Ablett do a kick flip on Instagram like years ago, but fucking Mitch Robinson throwing down a line. Actually, yeah. There's a great skate park in Ararat. Maybe when the Bulldogs are here, we'll get Jack McRae out here. I'd say Bailey Williams, but he's in the twos.
Might be in the VFL warm-up game. You never know.
All right, guys. Everyone, we're going to be doing our top 12, the first round of a draft. And Cam and I are going to be doing the AFL fantasy, and then we'll have a discussion. And then we'll go on to the super coach. So you can start, you know, you don't have to tune in for that at the end. You can just plus 15, plus 30 on the pod for the super coach rankings. But we will get into the AFL fantasy ones where... we're just a fun discussion, just looking at what we think at the moment could go down in your drafts. And for this exercise, we went with captains on, just because it might mix up a few of the early picks on who you pick, and also positionless. So not necessarily based on who we think will average the most or score the most total points, but who we at this moment believe should be going in the first round, weighing up both the positional need and the scoring output. Maybe I'll let Cam go first, so I don't get embarrassed with my... first 12.
Yeah, I love this season. It's quite fun. So I'll go with Grundy at 1, Jack McRae at 2, Titch at 3, Dunkley at 4, Whitfield at 5, Gorn at 6, Treloar 7, 8, Coniglio, 9, Kelly, 10, Oliver, 11, Merritt, and on the turn, Lloyd. So, and no the Tim logic Taranto. Behind it.
Whoa.
No Tim Taranto.
Wow.
And the logic behind this, I guess, is
no
that...
no Treloar in the top 10.
Yeah, Treloar was there.
Oh, was it? Sorry.
7.
You said you.
Yeah.
Treloar gets so much disrespect.
He does.
The guy just blows up every single year.
Yeah. And it's hard to see him regressing because he just does the same thing and has the same role every year, right? So, the logic with this, though, is that, you know, whereas last year everyone was really high on defenders and other key positions, I actually think there'll be less key positions drafted in that first round this year because there's such a significant drop-off in midfielders after the first, you know, 6 or 7. So
why do you have Titch so high? What's your reasoning for that?
Yeah, I find it really hard to believe that he can regress so far that he's not in the top 10. Let alone the top 5. I get that he's coming back from a broken leg.
So you think he's still going to go 120 plus after a broken leg?
I think he can...
Well, he doesn't have to.
He didn't have to.
I think he can go 115 and you'd still be okay if you took him at 3. Like, I think the upside potential is worth the risk at number 3.
Fair enough.
Well, I'll quickly go through mine and we'll just...
don't, Cam. I reckon that is a shit take.
What?
Ooh. I reckon that is a fucking horrendous take, to be honest.
Where do you see him going?
Oh, it's not where I see him going. This is where I'm ranking him. I don't have him in my... like, in my super coach, I don't have him in my top 12. Your first round, man, you need a... Jono, you're with me on this one. You need... you don't need to win the draft in your first round. You need...
I've got Titch in my top 12.
You don't need... you need to not fuck up your draft in the first couple rounds. And I reckon draft Titch, I'd rather him be someone else's problem.
Okay.
I'll explain. The way I saw it with Tom Mitchell, and I ranked him, I'll go through mine in a minute, but I sort of had a contingency to say if he was playing round one where I had him and if he wasn't. Because even when he's not, even if he's not right, I look at it the way we looked at Gaff last year, and I think you're a bit critical, Steve, on where people were drafting Gaff.
This isn't coming back from a suspension. This is coming back from a broken leg. When Gaff was fit.
I understand that.
Did you see him running around in LA? He looked fit, man.
So what are you, you're saying if with him coming back, you don't think, like, what sort of a score are you thinking that he's going to get that's not going to make you happy to draft him? Like, let's assume that he does play.
No. This is where, if you draft him at three, he has to average that. If he averages 105, you're coming from behind. Like, you have to make it up elsewhere. You have to have hit on some good picks elsewhere. Like, to me, that's why it's a bad pick. Like, I'll compare it to Dangerfield last year, right? If you wanted to pick Dangerfield as a top, Dangerfield's going to be the top four. There's no way he's not. If you fucking drafted Dangerfield and old mate Cobber got Rowan Marshall off the waiver wires in round one, he was in a better spot than you.
Yeah. But I mean, do you take history and just completely throw it away because...
Well, I don't take history and throw it away because I'm taking guys who have come back from broken legs and they have been shit the year after.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's precedent there. And you're totally right. I, however, think the risk and opportunity may outweigh it. Doss, what do you got?
I don't know if I want to say now.
Number one, you've fucking done it, haven't you?
No, okay. Brody Grundy at one. Jack McRae at two, Josh Dunkley at three, Lachie Whitfield at four, Tom Mitchell at five, in brackets if playing round one, Adam Treloar at six, Tim Taranto at seven, Josh Kelly at eight, Max Gawn at nine, I've got Stephen Cornelio / Tom Mitchell if not playing round one, but missing rounds one to three at 10. 11, Merritt, and 12, Jake Lloyd on the turn as well. And Clayton Oliver was one of those guys I kept tossing up, but fell down a little bit. And Dangerfield sort of just missed out as well.
So what do you think the difference? Yeah, what do you think the difference is going to be between Whitfield and Dangerfield, can I ask? In average?
Dangerfield?
5 to 10 points.
Oh, like, well, are you saying Whitfield's a forward and Dangerfield's
sorry,
a forward?
Whitfield a forward, and I figured Dangerfield was going to be a pure mid. If he was a forward,
so what's the what's the point split between them if one's going at pick, was it 4 or 5, and the other one's going at 12?
What do you mean?
Well, why is one at 4 and one at 12?
Lachie Whitfield averaged like 114 and Dangerfield about 107 or 8.
Yeah, so there's
a
6-point split between them. One's had Tim Kelly leave the team and the other one's about to have a whole raft of injured players come back. This is just a question, man. Like, you say, well, this is what they average and that's fine.
I think I had him that high due to positional scarcity as a forward, and I think I think if you don't grab Whitfield early, I think that's a strategy, and I figure it will come early. Like, one person's going to go for the forward, and I think if you don't get that forward, then you go with a completely different strategy. So, but I think there could be a merit in doing
so. You don't think Danger's a forward?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. All right, fair enough.
Sorry, yeah, I assumed Danger as a mid. That's where I was going and Whitfield as a forward.
I also went in assuming Danger's a mid, and I was sort of, I think you may, you know, off the starting blocks with Whitfield, may get a 10 to 15 point differential off the bat to the next best forward if Danger and a couple of others lose their forward
space. Yeah, it's really dependent. But anyway, Tom Mitchell, five as well.
I reckon Whitfield comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it wouldn't. I wouldn't surprise me. But what about Josh Dunkley? That was scary. But I just looked at it. I'm like, he averaged 126 from what I had the numbers here.
He comes back incredible.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's a really tough one, man. I think he will go at three in some drafts, and I think he'll go in the second round in some drafts. And I don't know, man.
I'm looking at him at the turn. Turn's a pretty good spot to pick him, depending on what you've got in front of
him. In the dream team formats, I'd say he's a lot better than Supercoach.
Yeah.
But
from round 7 to 23, people think it's a smaller sample size. From 7 to 23, he only went under 113 three times.
Libba.
I don't know. Huge.
Libba played a lot of that.
Was it after the bye? Before? I can't remember when he got injured.
Both.
It was one of the Carlton games.
Both. 23. He played both.
Okay. I know he got... Libba got injured in the Carlton game. I can't remember if it was the first or second one, that's all.
He played in both halves, so I don't know. I mean, it's pretty strong.
Mm.
I had four G-dubs in the top 12, though. That's
bizarre. And that's what, in mine, I basically had Bont. I'm pretty high on Bont for next year. I had him just sitting outside that top 12. And I looked through it, and I'm like, man, I've got heaps of G-dubs, heaps of Western Bulldogs. They can't all make up the top 12. It doesn't make sense.
Why?
And so Bont was just unlucky. I just don't see it happening.
Can I ask what's the hate for Matt Crouch in the Dream Team community?
I don't get it either. He's just outside for me as well.
Yeah.
Fucking shit truck, that's why. Sorry, that's just my ownership rage. That's ownership rage, I'm sorry. Sorry.
But why?
I think he gets flat tons a lot, and a lot of people just want he's consistent with the 100 to 110, but people want that 120. And he delivered it late in the year, but people just want, I mean, especially in this captain's league, the guys going this first round that we've got are guys that have had big ceilings, I think, as well. And Matt Crouch might have gone higher in a non-captain's league, maybe.
I would have thought that worked the other way, but anyway.
Anyway. Get on to Supercoach, maybe. Yeah.
All right, I'll start off with my list first. Coming in at number one is Brody Grundy. Number two, Jack McRae. Number three is Nat Fyfe. Four is Lachie Neal. Five, Paddy Cripps. Number six, I've got Danger as a forward. Number seven, I've got Tommy Mitchell. Number eight, Coniglio. Number nine, Maxi Gawn. 10 is Whitfield, and to round it out, I've got Bont and Kelly, but Kelly, I'm very skeptical on. I can still roll. I was tossing up between an Oliver Treloar type as well, so the only thing that worries me about Kelly is games played. He never completes a full season, but if I'm on the turn, that's fine, because then I can grab either Treloar Dunks or an Oliver, something like that, so that's why I've got him at 12.
Yeah, that's interesting. I got Oliver in there, but I'll go through mine, and we're probably a little bit different on Gawn. I've got Grundy at one, McRae at two, Fyfe at three, so the same as you, Jono. I've actually got Gawn in at four. It's just that captaincy thing.
Yeah, I teased around with that, but I thought people wanted to go more established midfielder over Ruckman, but I see it.
Yeah, I mean, just back-to-back 127, 128, it's like,
yeah,
I got to have it if I'm playing captains. Five, I've got Neal. Six, like you, I've got Danger as a forward. Seven, I've got Patrick Cripps. Eight, I've got Clayton Oliver. Nine, I've got Josh Kelly. 10, I've got Jake Lloyd, so defender there. I think he's, looks like the standout defender. It's actually interesting, man. I was sort of having a look at the ranks, and it's like someone's going to draft Grundy at one and pick up like Coniglio and Laird on the 2-3 turn and have like the fucking sickest team, man. Whitfield is a forward at 11 and Dunkley at 12. So I like Treloar, but I've got to have, I think the thing with Treloar is that Beams has missed so much time this year, so I'd expect him to be back in the Collingwood team. And yeah, Dunkley's second half numbers were just off the planet. But I mean, give me Clayton Oliver. He's had double shoulder reconstructions and come back and averaged a 109. Hasn't missed a game in 3 years, and 109's his worst average.
Yeah. I think when I was doing this, I really nearly put him up there in my first round, even in the fantasy game. Just like what you're saying, he had an interrupted preseason last year and came out. And what I was saying on last week, I think it was last week's show as well, how Melbourne dropped over 100 fantasy points as a team last year. And if they just claw back at that a bit and can hold on to possession, Oliver could have a massive year this year as well.
Yeah, it's funny.
The whole team was behind the eight ball last year.
I actually predicted he'd average 105 last year and copped heat for it in the preseason, and he did exactly that. Still not sold on Clayton Oliver in the Dream Team model as being the round one midfielder more than a round 2-3 midfielder, but yeah, he is a damn good player.
All right, well, that was a bit of fun looking at some early picks, I guess. We'll get on to some questions from social media as well. And at the Draft Doctors on Twitter, Ben sent in a great bingo card on this question thing. We've tweeted that out. He's got his bingo card ready for the show. Russ has got a picture of me picking a breakout with a frustrated face, and thankfully Cam got to do it, so I didn't have to do this. Another bit more love for Dossie. Adam says, if there isn't a dedicated 10-minute slot to Chase Jones' breakout from Doss, I'll be disappointed. Yeah, well,
you can record that after we record and slot into the show on your own time, please.
Yeah. Adam has his breakout contenders as Bailey Scott from North, Jack Ross, we spoke about him. Adam Chera also spoke about him. Nick Blakey from Sydney. Jordan Clark and who's that? Murphy. Is that from the Crows?
Murphy OG.
In Murphy. I'm trying to think. Anyway. The next question comes from Owen. Oh, DOS must be pretty horny for this pod. Hashtag under 22. Jaden says, how many articles about Tim English putting on some KGs can we handle before we start considering him to break out next year? Steve, you spoke about him before.
Love me some Tim English. If we compare him to Brody Grundy in that Ruckman, who's not a great tap Ruckman, but wins it around the ground. Brody Grundy actually became a better tap Ruckman after a few pre-seasons. And I think it was, if he does the same thing as Brody Grundy, it's not this season, but it's the next one that he made the leap. And keep in mind that the season before the 100-plus leap, he was actually without Jared Witts. I know they played together and shared a bit of ruck time earlier in the career. So, I mean, I think he'll be relevant this year, but I don't think he'll be one of those top seven rucks you rely on week in, week out until possibly the next year. But I like the moves that the Bulldogs have made in potentially getting Jackson Trengo the hell out of that team.
Josh Bruce attended a few center bounces and could do a tap
Bruce
ruck.
Bruce or Shaq will be the backup.
Yeah. Tom... Oh, no, we'll go to Peter first. Peter says, Jack Bowes, Blake Akers, breakout contenders.
Yeah,
so Jack, not all we're looking for. Oh, Bowes would be, is he Bowes, third year or fourth year?
Yeah, Bowes is pretty close. He fell just shy on a few different stat lines. He's similar to McGrath, but I feel like with Gold Coast, they brought in Hugh Greenwood, they brought in Brandon Ellis, they brought in a couple of other mids. Bowes probably won't see too much of a jump or too much more opportunity than what he got this year, and so probably more consistent rather than a step change.
I'd say Bowes is going to be a defender in the going forward. Surely that's the role.
Yeah, and I think so as well, and that sort of says more to the fact that he probably won't have a big step change.
Tom DT asks, what actually happens in the movie Shutter Island starring Leonardo DiCaprio?
Never seen it.
I've seen it.
Oh, really?
I've remembered it. It was pretty... Doesn't he realise it's all in his head and top himself? Isn't that...
Yeah, unlike, it's in his head.
Spoilers.
Unlike Jeffrey Epstein.
All right, we have another question, and this is from the Facebook. You can follow us at The Draft Doctors on there.
It's a good movie, though. Sorry if I ruined it. Sorry for the kids.
It is a good movie. It's one of those movies, once you've seen the twist, it's like, well...
The
rewatchability factor is not there. Can you guys talk about the Gold Coast mid setup with the inclusion of Raoul and Anderson, the draftees? That's us. That's from Stuart. And he says, with Bowes, Brody, Goderini in there as well this year.
David Swallow will be there.
Oh, Sean Lemons.
it's actually interesting because we were charting this, like we mentioned about a billion times, we were charting the CBAs, and Gold Coast are one of the most heavily rotating midfield outfits. The consistent guys were Swallow and no one.
Lemons.
Yeah. I don't think Goderini's in there. I think you'll get a smattering. Hey. You'll get a smattering of Miles. You'll get a smattering of Took Miller. They'll bring...
The goat is looking thick this preseason. Real, real strong.
Unlike your Ready mustache.
On that note, I think we'll finish it there. Thanks for listening to The Draft Doctors. We will see you next week, as always, on a Wednesday.
Thanks for listening to the Draft Doctors Podcast. For more tips and in-depth analysis, head over to thedraftdoctors.com.au.